The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
This week saw a deal struck for a new government between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, the Regional Independents and the Hayley Rays. A ceasefire deal was also finally brokered between Israel and Gaza, but whether or not that will actually hold for all three phases remains to be seen. For our Friday forum, we're joined by Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil TD for Clare, Richard Boyd-Barrett, People Before Profit TD for Dunleary, and Elaine Loughlin, political editor of the Irish Examiner. We'll go to Gaza first, and you, Richard, being pleased is the wrong word. Relieved is probably the right word.
Relieved, yeah. And what people in Gaza have gone through for the last 15 months is just not possible to describe. People are celebrating in Gaza the fact that there's hopefully a ceasefire going to take hold.
And yet within Israel, in the war cabinet, there are those who say it's a catastrophe to pull out of Gaza without a complete defeat of Hamas.
But look, you see, this. I hope that the world is going to wake up to the nature of the Israeli regime after all this, because they have been forced into a ceasefire because of the amazing resilience of the Palestinian people against this genocidal assault and the huge protests across the world that have put pressure on European governments, on the American government, on the British government to try and rein this crazy regime, this murderous regime in. But we have to, this is not going to resolve the problems, right? And Israel will do this again and again and again.
But Hamas have also said they're going to do October the 7th again.
But you see, I really think we have, without condoning or supporting any particular political faction, there is a fundamental difference between the occupier and the occupied. The Palestinians are the victims here. And there will be conflict as long as they are denied their basic right to self-determination, to an end to the apartheid regime, and the return of millions of Palestinian refugees who were ethnically cleansed from their homeland. Unless those issues are resolved, this will blow up again. But the world has to recognise the Palestinians are the victims in this situation.
Timmy.
Yeah, I agree with pretty much everything that Richard has said. And we have to look beyond this now. So we kind of have reached a stalemate position right now. The ceasefire is a welcome relief, I'm sure, for the people in Gaza. We need to see a rapid response now from the European Union in terms of ensuring that we get the humanitarian aid in as quickly as possible. And we need to see the next phase and the next phase of this happen.
Interesting that the remark from someone in the European Union saying we are not players in this conflict, we are payers. And that's where the bill.
We have to move beyond just being pain. I think we have to be more proactive in terms of our action and ensuring that UNRWA and other agencies there are appropriately supported and funded, and given the legitimacy that they have. Because there has been an effort to undermine UNRWA too through all of this. But we then need to, I think, work a lot more progressively towards that two-state solution. Because as Richard has rightly identified, when you have the occupied people and the occupier, you are never going to find a pathway towards lasting peace without a political solution. And I think that resides in the two-state solution, which Ireland have been to a really strong extent over recent months, pushing that at European level. And it's not widely accepted there either.
And I think getting to this point, and it's taken 15 months, bar that 7 days that we had fairly short distance after October.
And that collapsed very quickly.
After 7 days. But maintaining and sustaining peace, I think, will be more difficult than people are anticipating because, yes, we have the Palestinian side, a nation that have been traumatised for 15 months now. But you also have people who are very much suffering on the Israeli side. And we have 100-odd hostages that have yet to come out there. A third of those will be corpses. They will be bodies taken out of Gaza. And we have the likes of the Bibas children, two children. One was 8 months old when he went in there. You could see a scenario if those children come out in body bags. What happens on the streets of Israel, and does that collapse any sort of a ceasefire due to the pressure that both Netanyahu would be on and the extreme, I'd say, anger that would boil over in relation to what Hamas has done? Now, you'd have to say that if those children are dead, it would be as a result of an Israeli strike. But whether the Israeli relatives, friends and community could accept that, it remains to be seen. I think another important thing is We talk about the day after, and that is built into the third phase of this ceasefire agreement if we get that far. And when on this side of the world, when we talk about what happens the day after, we rightly talk about rebuilding Gaza, making sure that there are schools, there are healthcare facilities, there is a life for the Palestinians to live in Gaza, which they don't have now. On the Israeli side, they talk about containment of Hamas, and the day after means how do we ensure that Hamas does not
Richard.
Rebuild?
You see, this is the problem, and I have to strongly disagree with Elaine here. You see, there is a failure to really address the nature of the Israeli regime and this constant sort of parity between the crimes of Israel and the crimes of Hamas. Hamas didn't exist 20 years ago, but the persecution of the Palestinians has been going on for decades. Hamas are a symptom of an occupation and a campaign of ethnic cleansing pursued by Israel since it was established, and the fact that Israel is an apartheid state. Now, people need to consider the word apartheid. When we finally acknowledged that apartheid South Africa was an apartheid state, the world said that state must be dismantled. Israel is an apartheid state.
But you don't think it's going to be dismantled?
Well, see, I mean but not if we keep banging on about a two-state solution. A two-state solution is a dangerous mirage that has actually been used by Israel to continue to expand illegal settlements into Palestinian territory, and it perpetuates the idea of ethnic, religious and sectarian division. That's what it does.
But the idea that there would be a continuation of the land of Israel, including the West Bank and Gaza, in one territory, which would give an automatic demographic majority to the Palestinians.
But you see, again, you're seeing it in ethnic terms. I mean, we believe in a united Ireland here, don't we? Right? Yeah. Most of us believe in a united Ireland. We don't think permanent sectarian division based on partition is very helpful. In fact, it perpetuates sectarian conflict. It's exactly the same with the state of Israel, right? Why not have a single state of Palestine where everybody is equal and nobody gets priority based on their religious or ethnic identity? And in most places, most of the people in this country around this table would say that would be what we would
so you
want to see.
You rename it Utopia instead of Israel.
Palestine was like that for thousands of years. Jewish people have lived in the Middle East alongside Muslim people and Christian people and people of other religions for thousands of years. It was the intervention of the colonial powers supporting a particular ideology, Zionism, which is not a representative of all Jewish people by any stretch of the imagination. Zionism is a nationalist political movement that seeks to prioritise one religious and ethnic group over the others in a land where historically Palestinians and Jews and Muslims live together.
Look, those are ideological positions that you're expressing, Richard.
They're historical facts.
And they're historical facts, but they're also an ideological position. I mean, we've got to look at the...
So is yours, Timmy.
I'm trying to look at the practical situation right now.
It's not very practical, is it? Let's genocide.
Well, with respect, we just have reached the first rung of a very tall ladder about starting a peace process. And we know how that works here. We know the length of time that it takes. So where the ultimate destination might be, I think, is a long way down the road. But what's really positive, if there's anything that you could say is positive about that region, is that hopefully within the next day or two, there'll be a silencing of the bombs and the attacks at night on the people in Gaza, the women, the children and the men. And yes, there are tensions on all sides and there are positions that have been taken that have a historical context. But unless we kind of take that back and start looking at a pathway towards a continuation of the peace, but if we start getting entrenched in each side's ideological position, we're going nowhere. So I think the role of the European
Union
is
pursuing, if with respect, Timmy, we have been pursuing the ideological position of the Western governments and the notion of the two-state solution for about three decades now, right? It's failed. That's an ideological position. Two-state solution was a position that was developed in the late 1980s, early 1990s, right?
But
it's failed. It's led to genocide, multiple attacks on Gaza, constant war and conflict.
But we haven't had the two-state solution. Everything has failed right now. So we're starting again. We have to have some landing zone. Sorry, Ellen. We have to have some landing zone that everybody works towards. Elaine? That's not going to be easy.
I think the two-state solution was put out there and there was a real move behind it initially, and then it was just put to the wayside and has been ignored by mainly the US.
But even territorially, it's very difficult to envisage. You've got the West Bank and you've got the Gaza Strip separated by Israel.
Yeah.
And what are you going to have, a tunnel between the two? Yeah. Is that how you...
Two states, for example, is completely incompatible with the right to return of the Palestinian refugees, right? Now, the Palestinian right to return is a right under international law. Israel is never going to concede the right to return voluntarily. Because, and they say it very publicly, because if Palestinian refugees were allowed the right to return, from their point of view, it would end the supremacy of Jewish people within that state. Now, that is not a consideration for the world. It shouldn't be, because the right to return of the Palestinian refugees who were ethnically cleansed is an absolute cast in stone right under international law, as is the right to self-determination. So the maintenance of an apartheid state in Israel is incompatible with the vindication of international law and the rights of the Palestinians. Completely incompatible.
And we know how Israel has regarded motions carried in the United Nations over the years, and indeed the way they've treated UNRWA. I don't think there's optimism in your view.
Well, there is. I'll tell you what my optimism is. There are millions of Jewish people across the world who are opposed to Zionism. We have seen them speak out during this genocide. Auschwitz survivors, Treblinka survivors, Jewish people across the world, including, sadly, a small minority in Israel, who actually believe the apartheid state of Israel has been a disaster for the Jewish people. As well as, obviously, for the Palestinian people.
Well, obviously, we hope that the peace, such as it is, will hold to allow some respite for the people of Gaza. I was just thinking, I was wondering if seeing people rendered homeless by the wildfires in California would give Americans a little pause for thought as to what it's like to lose everything, the photographs of your loved ones, your passport, everything gone.
It was very interesting that one of the leading Houthi leaders sent a message of solidarity, which I thought was very interesting, to the people of Los Angeles, and said, notwithstanding the fact that we have very serious disagreements with your government over their support for Israel and what they've done in Gaza, we genuinely send our solidarity to the people of Los Angeles. I thought that was very, very interesting.
Now, Elaine, we move on to government formation. What do you think of the cobbled together majority for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
Well, I'm just glad that we have a deal done now at this stage, because we've been really in a cycle of absolutely no news when it comes to both politicians and journalists working around Leinster House. It really has been a dull few weeks, and unfortunately, it seems like there was no real drama when it came to cobbling together this programme for government, apart from maybe the last minute wrangling with the Healy-Rae brothers and getting that junior ministry for Michael Healy-Rae. It will be a very different government to the outgoing government. We obviously won't have the green stamp on it. And it'll be interesting, because when you have independents, as we saw the last time around with the Independent Alliance in government, each vote can be contentious and people can easily throw wobblers.
Okay, so there could be a few people overboard. Richard, do you feel a bit lonely now? Michael Healy-Rae inside the tent and you're still outside on those lonely opposition benches?
Look, as far as I'm concerned, it's people power and movements in society that force change within the political system, not the games that are played in Dáil Éireann. But
Michael was a very vociferous and pugilistic opposition person,
well,
wasn't
it? They have raised the art of speaking out of two sides of your mouth to a fine art now, and it's really quite incredible. So they want to be ministers, they want to write, and they have written a programme for government, committed to support the government, but they want to be in the opposition as well.
Timmy, can you explain that to me? They want opposition speaking time while being in support of the government.
I don't see it as opposition speaking time. I see it as speaking time.
Speaking time that backbenchers in the government don't get.
But they do over time. I mean, there's an evolutionary process going on in the Dáil over the years where it was just rigid political parties. We then had people who left political parties, formed independents. They didn't feel they were getting the proper access to represent the people. There was the creation of the technical groups, which has been a rather interesting formulation. And I don't think we have seen it work through. We're faced now with a situation where we haven't been faced
but
with
before.
But you've
got your mates in not in cabinet, but they're super juniors who attend cabinet and can't vote in cabinet.
Yeah,
you've
not.
Got them. You don't have to but mouth off in the Doyle. You can just go to your mate and say, will you bring this up?
See, this is spurious this, in any event.
I mean, you're part of a technical group, I think, a small party. There was a combination where you came together with people that were like-minded at a stage. You created a bigger party. I think it was Rise or something at the time, where it gave you better conditions or whatever, even though you still were separate parties. So you know how to use that technical grouping structure to get advantage. And there's nothing wrong with that. I wish you well with
100%.
That.
But the first of all, the standing orders are clear. The groups can be formed by opposition groups. Standing order 170, right? So you're going to have to change the rules. Nobody is saying that the regional independents or the Healy Ray should not have speaking time. The question is there speaking time taken out of government time or out of opposition time? And they are looking for it to be taken out of opposition time when they are the authors.
Yeah,
Michael Lowry is the lead negotiator of the programme for government and he wants to sit on the opposition benches. Are you serious?
Well, then maybe let's
it's
look
a joke.
At,
why doesn't it? Why don't they take their time out of the government's time?
They're
getting extra resources, extra salaries, extra expenses, and they want the staff resources and speaking time from the opposition as well.
It's just maybe the
Elaine.
Unbelievable.
Sorry, Elaine.
Not only that, like Timmy is trying to play this down and say that backbench government TDs get all the time in the world, which is not correct. And we had significant griping in the last coalition amongst backbench TDs from both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, saying that these groups, these technical groups, they get far more speaking time. For example, they get to question the leader, the Taoiseach or the Taoiseach of the day during leaders' questions each week. If there's significant statements, they get an allocated slot. And basically, the backbench TDs are waiting till really nobody is listening to
them. Now, in theory, they can
go to
their parliamentary parties and make the points to their representatives in cabinet, but they don't get to be seen on the telly then in Oireachtas TV. And that's part of it.
No, and their points are not on the record of the Dáil either.
It's a choice for the government. The government could give them time and they could give them prominent slots, right? But they want their cake and eat it.
Well,
so why don't the government, because you've just entered into an arrangement with them, you've given every one of them virtually a ministry or a chair of a committee or a junior whip position. I mean, this, I'll tell you how farcical this is. As far as I understand it, Barry Heenan, independent, is going to be given a junior whip, government whip position. So he's going to be a junior whip for the government, but he wants to sit in the opposition benches and take leaders' time on the opposition side.
Mad. That is
it's
mad.
Absolutely
objectively
mad.
I think, Timmy, it's mad.
I think what we need to do is maybe reform the parliamentary process, because I think anything that restricts somebody who's elected to represent the people restricts them getting speaking time on critical issues. And I think we can do that.
Stop saying that.
There has been a sort of an indication that somehow there's this limited amount of time apportioned to the opposition, and now you're going to have people from government in that space, when in truth they get lots of time. And if we need more time on debates, well, then let's give the time.
Whatever about the practicalities of this, I mean, it is a cod that you have someone who's involved in the formation of the programme for government who wants to pretend they're in the opposition.
With respect, Pat, they can do that when they come into this duty. They can be against the government every time they speak in public. And then go in and vote. But the public will have a look at that. So I think, to be honest, people that I'm talking to don't see this allocation of opposition.
Sign up to a programme for government with carbon tax and then speak against it.
A dispassionate, non-partisan voice, Elaine.
I have to agree with you. I think it is them trying to, you know, run with the hare and hunt with the hounds on this and wanting to speak out of both sides of their mouth, as Richard Boyd Barrett has said, because in that case, maybe we should be setting up technical groups of Fianna Fáil backbenchers and letting them cross the chamber
the final element of this I wanted to talk about, Timmy. There will be people on the backbenches in both of the main parties who are going to be really cheesed off. What do I have to do to get a job? When these guys, apparently at no constituency price being paid in this programme for government, we shall see. But what are they doing? They just sign off on this document, which is so all-encompassing that it's mom and apple pie right throughout the whole document.
Yeah.
All they have to do is sign off on this and they get a job with more money and more help.
Well, it's not about just signing off and getting a job. It's entering into a commitment to supporting the government for the next 5 years.
But the lads in your party, the backbenchers, are doing precisely that. So, what's in it for me?
Well, being part of a party that's delivering, they have access to our own group of ministers, people in the backbenchers, and the same in Fine Gael. And they're bringing on board people who have, for their own reasons, sought not to be in a political party. And that's a political price that
but
has to be paid.
But you're in the Dáil a wet weekend and you get a job.
But with respect, that could happen if you entered into an arrangement with a smaller political party as well. And nobody would, I think, be against the notion of putting in place a strong, durable group of people who will see out the longevity of the programme for government. Because the one thing that backbenchers don't want is another election next May or June, having come through this, or the following year. So the idea of certainty, which is really important from a foreign investment perspective, which is really important for securing employment, which is really important for securing the future of the government.
So you're paying them for their vote, basically.
But they're getting privileged positions, they're getting all the perks, they're getting extra salaries. They're getting
Pat has raised a point that I need to push back
and
against.
And they want the opposition
because it's
time
not
as
just
well.
About money. If anybody is suggesting that being a minister of state in a department or a minister of state with the capacity to attend government is somehow just an extra few bob, just to buy your vote, I think would undermine the work that ministers of state and ministers generally do. And I've noticed in some of the papers today, it's seen as, you know, the minister of state's salary is an allowance. It's for a very considerable amount of extra work which they do, and that has been the case
last words,
through
Hugh
the
Elaine.
Decades.
I think Timmy raised a valid point there that they could have gone in with another smaller party. They didn't. If both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael had gone in with a smaller party, we wouldn't be having this discussion because there's no way the likes of Labour or even the Greens, like last time, would be splitting their party, half going into opposition.
But Elaine, unfortunately, they all walked off the pitch. The responsibility of the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste was to put was to reflect on the outcome of the election and put together an administration that would last the test of time.
They made the fatal mistake of propping up another Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government. But now, of course,
that's democracy, Richard. That's the outcome of the election.
It's been a disastrous failure for any party, certainly left a centre party that has ever done it. But now we've got a load of people who presented themselves as independents for the last 5 years, pretended to be opposition for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, but who were actually Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in disguise.
On that note, we have to finish it there. Richard Boyd-Barra, thank you very much. Timmy Dooley, thank you very much. And Elaine Loughlin, political editor of the Irish Examiner, thank you very much. Don't forget, all our items from today are uploaded as podcasts. You can listen to them on the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. Search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On Newstalk.